something we can all do is not be afraid of what including more women, especially more composers from the past or more performers, talking about them in our classes, not be afraid that by including these women now that we're pushing out other people.
Welcome to Femme Forte, a podcast where we celebrate women in music and performing arts. I'm your host, Amanda DeVries. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Femme Forte. Happy Women's History Month. I'm so excited to be releasing Season 3 to you all very soon. So many exciting conversations and guests are in store, and I cannot wait to share. We are kicking off today with a very special episode that brings me back to my roots. This episode was recorded live in my alma mater, Texas A&M University Kingsville, with fellow Javelinas on the panel. We talk about empowering women in music education and paving the path forward for women in our space. It was so much fun getting to talk to these amazing women, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome back to Femme Forte. Today, we have a very, very special episode that holds so close and dear to my heart. We are celebrating the very beginning of Women's History Month. Today is March 1st. I am here at Texas A&M Kingsville, my alma mater, and we're doing a live podcast recording here in the recital hall. So I'm very lucky to have these three amazing guests. We have Liz Ortega-Breeze, we have Dr. Melinda Brew, and we have Yasmin Cantu. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, so obviously I know a little bit about who y'all are as women, but just so that our audience and our listeners can get a sense of who you are, let's start with you, Liz. Like, tell us a little bit about who you are, the background that you come from, as well as your introduction to music and music education.
Okay. So I am currently the Director of Fine Arts in Flower Bluff ISD in Corpus Christi. I've started my 30th year in music education this fall. I am a Javelina. Go Hogs. I got my bachelor's degree as a Texas A&I student, and then my master's degree as a Texas A&M University Kingsville student. So I've got both degrees from here. Born and raised in Corpus Christi. Music for me started as an infant. As a toddler. I'm the youngest of five, and my mother was a single parent. My father passed away when I was a baby, and she sang in the church choir, and so I went when mom went to church choir practice. So I was singing and reading Spanish hymnals before I could read or write in English. I could harmonize with the best of the comadres. so that was my journey into music, into the love of music. But as being the youngest of five, my older siblings were all in band. So I was at every band concert and football game and parade. And I knew I was going to be in band. I knew that. And so when junior high came into play for me and I was ready to sign up for band, I already knew I was going to be a teacher because I had a phenomenal teacher in the sixth grade. I just didn't know what I was going to teach. And then my first day in the band hall, there was this tall, blonde hair, blue-eyed woman standing in the band hall. And I'd never seen a female band director, you know, all my years of my siblings being in band. And that was the first moment when I went, I can do that. That is something that I can do. And so from seventh grade, since I was a beginner in band, music education was going to be my route.
Yeah, that's amazing. And what about you, Dr. Melinda Brew?
Hi, please call me Melinda. I am originally from just outside of New Orleans, Louisiana. And I grew up, my mother was an opera singer. And my mother is actually a far better singer than I ever will be in my life. She had Juilliard knocking down her door to come and take her. But my mother was also diagnosed with polio when she was 4 months old. And so she had walking difficulties. She had like 10 surgeries by the time she was eight. She was paralyzed from the waist down for a time. She regained all of the use of her muscles except for her right leg. But My grandmother thought that moving to New York and a career on the stage was too much for her. So my grandmother didn't approve of her going on these big auditions. So my mother stayed close to home in Louisiana, and she met my dad. But I grew up in this beautifully musical family from my mom. And I sang my first solo at church when I was four in the Nativity play. And I always knew when I was a little one, I mean, I'm sure you can't imagine this, but I was a dramatic child. But I would go back and forth, you know, when somebody says, what do you want to do when you grow up? I always wanted to be a teacher or an actress or a singer. And I would go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And then when it came to high school, I moved around a lot as a child. And when it came to high school, I either wanted to be in band or choir or theater. And it turned out that my guidance counselor said, well, if you go for band or theater, you have to do an audition. And I said, well, I'm going to go to choir. So because I didn't have to do an audition, little did I know that I would be auditioning the rest of my life. But that's what got me into music.
Amazing.
Hello, my name is Yasmin Kathu. I am originally from Harlingen, Texas. And I would say that what basically got me into music was, I guess, seeing my mom, because she was in band. And I don't really have, like, a musical family. I'm kind of the only one that's, like, involved in music. So, I feel like I'm kind of, like, the odd one out there. And what got me, I guess, to be inspired to pursue music education is seeing... I know how, like, Liz brought up how she hadn't seen, like, female band directors, but my first middle school band directors were women. So that kind of, like, set the standard for me. And, like, from early on, then on, that's when I knew that I wanted to be, like, part of music education.
Yeah. And that is actually a great segue into, you know, you speak about it a little bit, but... I'm going to actually ask you, Liz and Melinda, of obviously you both have kind of been in music education for most of your career. And so especially now in education, we all know that like burnout is very easy. And so what is the why behind and what you still do and what fulfills you most about to keep you in music education?
My family's always been service oriented. My mother was very active in the church and very active in PTA. My father, I didn't know him, but I know this from my family, was very involved in the Steelworkers Union. He marched with Dr. Garcia, Hector P. Garcia. So there's always been this service oriented expectation, I guess, in our family. And growing up, I was always, again, my mom had a huge impact. We were going and helping and doing things in the neighborhood, outside of the community. So the service has always been there. I've always wanted to give back what I got. And that's what music education did for me. I tell people a lot that music saved me. And I say this with a lot of sincerity in my heart. You know, I grew up in a rough neighborhood, and I didn't realize it until I got older and I had a degree and going back into my neighborhood, and I'm like, I made it out, because a lot of my friends did not. You know, I call myself an educated hood rat. and that's the truth. That is the truth. So the idea of giving back to students and based off of what I got from being in music education and being around music in general was something I wanted to do. I just wanted to give back. And, you know, had you asked me when I first started teaching if I'd ever find myself in administration, I would have laughed at you, because my thought was, I'm going to die on the podium. That's what I was going to do. I was going to be a band director for my entire career. But as things would come up and leadership roles, and I don't even say leadership roles, but opportunities for leadership would come up. That was my pathway. That was my pathway. I kept seeing my journey changing. And I think that's where I'm at now, is I want to help grow teachers now, especially the younger teachers coming in. Retirement's a lot closer for me now than it was 20 years ago, and I'm ready to just to pass on my knowledge and everything I've learned so that the next generation, you know, has, you know, I'm giving it away, has the skill sets to keep going, because I still believe very passionately in the power of music education and what it can do for those students who absolutely need it to save their lives.
Absolutely.
I think for me, when you said what keeps you going, the first thing that popped into my mind was, well, there's still work to be done. There's still things, not only for me personally, that I have goals of, but of helping out the next generation and the generation after that. I love my job. I love my job. It's exhausting. I will tell you, it is exhausting. It is not a 9-to-5 job. It is a, you know, I'm looking up, I'm the opera director here at Kingsville, and I'm Googling wigs at 3 a.m. You know, it's a lot. But I also know, I particularly love the job that I do here, in that we have such an effect on social mobility. We are, I think the numbers around, we are a Hispanic serving institution, and I think we're about 70% Hispanic. A lot of our students are first generation. And to be able to work with this student body, and I have alumni who come back to me and they're saying they're the first one in their families to have insurance, they're the first ones in their family to have retirement plans, they're the first ones in their family to own a home. In 2019, the opera workshop we placed in the top four in the nation for the musical theater, and I took, you know, 8 young men to, because we were singing Officer Krupke from West Side Story. I took these young gentlemen to Cleveland, Ohio, and they sang at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And half of the students had never been on an airplane, and half of the students had never been north of San Antonio. So that kind of work is thrilling to be able to do.
Yeah, and I can even speak from personal experience. I can understand the impact that music education has on me. I mean, it's the whole reason, literally, why I'm in this seat right now. And so I continue to applaud and appreciate all the work that you both have done. So for Yasmin, you are getting ready on your way to be a music educator. So what excites you most about, you know, kind of jumping in there and being a part of that next generation?
I guess what excites me the most is moving on to the next part of my career, even though it seems pretty uncertain right now. I'm still kind of excited, I guess, for what's to come, because I've had pretty good like experiences like in my field observations, and I feel like those moments I've had with the students, it's gonna be worth like the work and stuff like that. I'm just pretty excited to pass my knowledge and to give students opportunities that I had, and maybe even more opportunities that I didn't have, especially for like young female musicians.
Yeah, that's, and speaking of young female musicians, I mean, you know, what a great way to kick off Women's History Month. I think I can say this for myself and everybody here, just it's so exciting just how something that was a passion project has been able to build a community and actually have people support the mission. And so like the fact that you all are here today truly, truly means the absolute world to me. And actually, Melinda, I want to talk to you specifically, because I don't know how many people know this in the room, but I was a part of Jump Camp that started here, which was a whole reason why I ended up going to this university. And I think it was a phenomenal experience, and I wish it would truly come back, because I can speak so highly of it. But I heard that you were a major part in the grant funding process, as well as just beginning the program as a whole. So can you talk a little bit about where the inspiration came from? And obviously I and so many people before me have found the value from that experience, but obviously I did not know how that even came out to be in the first place.
Sure, absolutely. My when this came about, gosh, it was probably 2012, my partner in crime and I, one of my best friends in the entire world, Dr. Naomi Seidman, she was working here at Kingsville with me. She and I kept talking about how in our methods classes, we would look around and see that the methods classes were, you know, 90% male students or 85% male students. And we kept thinking, this is interesting. And so finally we started digging into some numbers and it turned out that our department was around 66% male students and about 33% female students. And we just thought, well, what's going on there? Why aren't young women being encouraged to go into music? Or how can we make a difference in this? So we wrote a grant to start a women's leadership program for juniors to let them come to a college campus, experience life as a music major. We offered theory skills and private lessons and ensembles and training and just confidence. And it was the most fun experience. I think we ran for maybe 7 or 8 years until the funding for that, the source for that funding went away. I'm with you. I hope it comes back at some point. I really, really do. When Naomi left, Dr. Jansen was a huge part of co-running this camp with me. And it was just so special because, you know, when the week first started, it was girls from all over South Texas. And they would start the camp and they would be made up. They're like, oh, we're at college. And they'd have all this makeup on and they'd be doing, you know, their hair every day. And then by about the second or third day, they really just relaxed into themselves and they became confident and they weren't worried about being presentational for anyone. They were just allowed to speak for themselves. And it was really, really exciting and to encourage them to figure out if music was a path for them. It was very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a major part, and I've said this on the show before, it's been a major inspiration for this podcast, is because being able to see the building of women and creating that community, and honestly, one of the positive things that I really, really liked was the mentorship of already walking into day one of my freshman year. It's not like I went from, you know, a small fish in a big pond. I actually had some people that I kind of already knew from the camp to be able to feel comfortable. And so I think that was a really important important part of my life and my upbringing. So I just wanted to say personally thank you for that.
Of course.
And so on that note, I'm going to ask you, Liz, why do you think, one, I'm going to ask two questions. Why do you think women empowerment is so important, and kind of in connection with that, why is it important that we're having this conversation right now?
So, you know, you sent us those questions, and I really have been pondering that. What does it mean? What is women empowerment and its importance? And I think I always go back to my mom, and this is a real personal story, so I get a little emotional. Mm-hmm. My mom grew up in the 30s and 40s, and she was raised to get married and have children. That was the expectation. No fault of my grandparents. That was just the day and age. And my mother was not permitted to go to college by my grandfather, who I loved, by the way. I loved my grandfather so much. It wasn't until my father passed away, and again, I was little, there were five of us in the five children. My mom raised five children by herself, never remarried. And my grandfather saw how she was struggling, saw her struggling. The only skill set, and I don't say only skill set because it's their important skill set, she knew how to cook and she knew how to raise kids. Because she was so active and with the school that my siblings were all attending, the principal gave her a job. So she started off as a kindergarten aide, and then she became a cafeteria lady. My mom was a cafeteria lady. And she stayed in that job until I graduated, from ANI. And because my grandfather saw my mother struggling, when the generation of granddaughters came up, then he started encouraging his granddaughters to go to college and to get a degree and to not have to rely on a man. You know, and me growing up, because I never saw the male figure as part of my social upbringing. It was just my mother. So I never knew women couldn't do it, because my mom was doing it with five kids and a high school education. All I knew is I didn't want to work that hard. My mom worked hard. Mm-hmm. She worked hard. and so for me, you know, I've heard the representation matters. I hear that all the time. Representation matters, not just being as a female, but a female Hispanic in this position. But to me, the empowerment is giving women the choice. That's what it is, because my mom didn't have a choice. She didn't have a choice to go to school. She didn't have a choice after my dad died. So the empowerment part for me is to be able to give women the choice. Let me choose what my destiny is, what my path is. Let me decide where I'm going, and let me make the mistakes and fall. And I call it failing successfully. We're going to fail. Mm. Failing successfully is, what do you do after the failure? You know, where do you learn from that? And so giving women that option, you know, it's so important, because, you know, we've learned as a society that when everyone's doing what they choose to do, there's joy and happiness in the world, you know, and I'm all about that. So to me, female empowerment is just, it's so vital for the future of our society in a whole, and that's it.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with you. So, Yasmin, what does women empowerment mean to you, and do you have any kind of personal tie or stories as to why you're so passionate about it?
Well, to me, women empowerment means just giving women the same opportunities men have. And I don't really have what was the question about the story?
Oh, do you just have any sort of personal experience as to what fueled your passion to be so passionate about women empowerment?
Being a woman in low brass, a lot of my competition, a lot of my section is like male dominated. So me being in middle school, I didn't really like pay attention. I was like, oh, like whatever. But now that like I'm older, I realize like, oh, like there's like underrepresentation here. Like it's a stereotype, like, oh, I'm playing a guy's instrument, so like there's not gonna be as many women, but women can also play euphonium very well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And I can speak to that, being a percussionist in a very male dominated field. You know, all the time when I try to pitch the podcast, whether it's to different companies or so on and so forth, specifically female musicians is like a huge thing I really try to lean on, because one of the things that I always say is, we all know Ringo Starr from the Beatles, but how many women drummers can we name on one hand? And so that was something that I became more aware to, and same thing for me. It was like not necessarily something that I noticed like kind of growing up, but as I've gotten older and gotten more involved in advocacy, I realize how important these conversations are worth having. And so I'm going to ask each and every one of you, what is something that you're currently doing to support women? What is something that you're doing to kind of uplift women and empower them to support and create a path for the next generation? I know we touched on it a little bit.
So going back to what I said earlier about, you know, I could see retirement now. It's a lot closer to me than it was, you know, 30 years ago. So my desire is to pass on the knowledge that I have, and been really fortunate to meet a group of women. I've got a group chat with them that, you know, I just started mentoring. It started with a conversation with one female director just asking me a question, and then started with another and another, and then I just kind of put them together in a group chat, and we just uplift each other and support each other. And TMEA, we started meeting up, you know, for drinks. The first round was on me, so they were all about that. And it's just having conversations and getting them to meet other female band directors. One thing that I really want to stress Because I hear women do it to other women too. You know, we've got these stereotypes. I actually overheard someone tell a young female director, and you know, well, it's great that you want to be a head band director, but you can't do that and have a family. And I'm raising my hand going, I did. You know, I did it. It's all about family, you know, and there are those stereotypes there for the men too. I know a lot of men my age that you know, have made sacrifices to be away from their family. We live a coaching life, let's just be honest. As band directors, we live a coaching life. Football season, we're away from our family a lot. So it was just really about making that community and making sure that other women knew, yeah, you can do it. You just have to surround yourself with the right people. And I'm all about that. I'm about I want the right people around me. And if you're not the right people, I'm going to let you know you're not the right people. And being okay with that.
Yeah.
Being okay with being who you are. And if those people aren't your people, next.
Yeah, absolutely.
So first of all, I do want to say women can absolutely play euphonium because Yasmin played the fire out of the euphonium at the concerto competition a few weeks ago. It was so wonderful. I was really, really impressed. So something, I am a naturally positive person, and I do a lot of just casual supporting, walking around hallways and encouraging and asking students how they're doing. So that's a really simple thing to do just to keep people going and encouraging. But I also do some formal mentoring through some networks I have through professional organizations. And I do some informal mentoring too. I have one of those brains that just kind of says, oh, this person's looking for this job and this person is in that field. Maybe I can hook them up and they can have a Zoom conversation about how to get into that. So I do quite a bit of that. But one of the things that I've been really passionate about lately is representation in the literature. And there's a term full naming. I don't know if you heard this term before?
I have not.
So I read an article back in 2020, and it would appeared in Slate. I'm not sure if this term appeared before then, but it was talking about how, you know, we all mention Bach and Beethoven, Dvorak, and Schumann, but then we say Fanny Mendelssohn, and we say Clara Schumann, and we say Pauline Viardot. We, you know, the important, I'm making quotation marks, the important composers, the famous ones, get to only be called by their last names. But if you're a woman composer, or frankly, if you're a BIPOC composer from a less familiar path, we have to use both of your names because nobody knows who you are. So I've become really passionate about whenever I'm writing, I don't just write Bach, I write J.S. Bach, or I write Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. You know, I full name every composer, and I do it. We meet in this recital hall for Voice Studio, and every week I type up while the students tell me what they're going to sing for the week, and I make sure that I put every single composer's full name so that they see the female composers being represented. And I encourage you, as you guys go out into the field and you make your band posters, don't just put To Kelly, don't just put, you know, the Whitaker, etc. Put the names, because it also holds you accountable, because then you start to see, oh, this band director, this choir director, this orchestra director is only programming men, you know? So then it's not as necessarily obvious if you're not putting full names on there. So I really encourage a lot of that. I also do a lot of repertoire research. I have a personal goal. 33% of repertoire that I assign every semester has to be new to me. And a lot of the new things that I assign these semesters are by women or BIPOC composers. So I'm constantly expanding my knowledge so I can pass it on. Because let's face it, when our students leave us, they're going to teach what they know. Mm-hmm. They're going to teach what's familiar to them because they're so overwhelmed in those first few years. So if they're not learning women or BIPOC composers while they're in college, they're not going to teach them. So those are huge passion projects for me.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, exposure is really key to all of this. And I say this a lot, but with privilege comes responsibility, and making those opportunities for that is something. But yeah, no, I learned something new today. So that's so cool.
I love that idea, by the way. I love that.
So what about you, Yasmin?
So I'm part of a service organization that does promote women in music. So I feel like being part of that, I'm always actively like supporting women in music. And I also wanted to point out that for my recital, I do have a woman composer programmed, because I know a lot of people usually like will just program men, but I wanted to include that in my recital as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so something that I note here in this room is that we have not only women, but men. So props to you all. And so that means a lot to me. And so I'm gonna ask you all again, just for everybody who is listening, everybody in the room, we as women all know to support one another and kind of naturally can create that community, but bringing these conversations to the forefront, I mean, y'all just showing up here today is step one of this. And so what other things can everyone in general do to help support this mission?
I feel like I've been on this journey for a long time in educating people, and I do give props to the men, the professional men that were in my life who gave me leadership roles. And I have great relationships with them. Paul Hagen is one of my, I love him to death. And one thing that, and again, when I think back on it now, and I realize, well, one thing that he didn't do, or my high school band director, who was a man, didn't do, is they didn't make me feel any different than anybody else. They were giving me opportunities that they were giving everybody. I had the same opportunities, the same chances as everyone. And what they were looking at were my skills, not that I was a woman, not that I was Hispanic, only just my skills. And so I as someone now in what I do, and I'm the one hiring people for positions, or I'm recommending folks for positions, you know, I make that very important. I don't even look at where their degree comes from anymore, because to me that really doesn't matter. I want to know their skill set, what they're bringing. Doesn't matter to me either whether they're male or female. I need to know their skill set. And so that, to me, that is a very important thing. When you can make someone feel valued because of what they bring to the table and not because they're male or female. You know, it's we have to normalize things. It's got to be normal for there to be 20 female band directors applying for the same job as 20 male band directors. It's just got to be normal. And so no one's shocked that, oh my gosh, look at all these women. Well, why can't there be this many women? So, you know, the importance of just normalizing things and not making a big deal out of, you know, the gender role. It's your skill set. That's all that should matter, is your skill set and what you bring.
Absolutely.
I think something we can all do is not be afraid of what including more women, especially more composers from the past or more performers, talking about them in our classes, not be afraid that by including these women now that we're pushing out other people. I had a conversation a couple years ago with a music historian who I will not name because of the story. And I said something, I said, you know, this student has been very surprised that there's not women composers necessarily mentioned in the music history class. And it's not a faculty member here, I promise. And the professor said to me, well, you know, Melinda, who would you like me to take out of the program? Am I going to push out Rachmaninoff or Tchaikovsky or, you know, Bach? Who do you want me to remove to make places for these other people? We don't have to take anyone away. We can fit them all in, I promise you. We can take one paragraph out and we can start adding women in. And, you know, it's something that both Yasmin and Liz said, they both knew they could become band directors because they could see it. How do young women know that they can become, you know, trumpeters and opera singers and composers and music historians and music theorists if they don't see it. You know, if you see it, you can believe you can do it. So we have to make space.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. So we're actually about to wrap up here. And so I have one lasting question for you all. Knowing the knowledge that you have now, what advice would you have told your younger self? Whether it was becoming a musician for the first time, whether it was getting on the podium for the first time.
That's actually pretty hard for me. And I say that because I didn't, again, because I saw my mom doing everything, I never knew I couldn't. And it wasn't until I was in a contest room and I was the only female in the room that I realized I was the only female in the room. It didn't feel uncomfortable to me though. So if I look back at my past self and if I were to give myself advice, gosh, what would I give myself? I think what I would give myself is the permission to fail. Because once I realized I was the only woman in the room, it became a matter of pride then to not fail. But then I was making myself sick because of that. That's a whole other conversation, boys and girls. It's a whole other conversation. So I think that would be my piece of advice is to not be so hard on yourself and knowing that it's a journey to get to a certain level. I had dreams and aspirations as a band director that I never saw come into fruition. But I know now that the universe had a different job for me. There was a different pathway for me. And I think that's the pathway that I've fallen in love with. So just the permission to fail. I wish I had given that to myself.
Yeah. What about you, Melinda?
I would tell myself two things. I would tell myself to be brave and try the hard things. I think I limited myself in a lot of areas because I thought, oh, I'm not good enough for that audition, or I'm not ready for that. And I waited for a long time on a lot of things. And looking back now and knowing what I know now, I could have done those things. So I would have told myself to be brave. And I also would have told myself to not worry about looking to others for validation. I think we place so much importance on our peers and our teachers and, like, literally people on the street. I can remember, like, taking comments from just a person I had met for 1 second and, like, taking it like it was a complete judgment. And yes, of course they know what they're talking about my singing. No, they don't. They heard me sing for 2 minutes. you know yourself best. So I would have, you know, wanted to rely on my own intuition more rather than really, really looking externally.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about you, Yasmin?
I would probably tell my younger self that you are a better musician than you think you are, because I had a lot of self-doubt and, like, insecurities throughout, like, middle school, high school. So I feel like a lot of that did hold me back as a younger musician. So I feel like I would just try to, like, be there for my younger self. And if I could tell them, I would tell them, just, you are better than what you think you are. And it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to mess up. It doesn't make you any less of a musician.
Amen to that. Well, thank you once again for being on the show. It has been such a joy. Thanks for listening to Femme Forte. Femme Forte is produced and hosted by me, Amanda DeFries. Music is by Humans Win. To learn more about our guests, sponsors, and to get more resources, go to www.femfortepodcast.com and follow us on social media at Femme Forte Podcast.